to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
All right. You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the Gau Studios in Houston, here's Glenn Davis.
What are we listening to here, Michael? What do we got?
The Black Keys.
Dan Auerbach. Love the guy solo, too. Love him solo. Concert's coming up. Speaking of them, Kenny Chesney down at BBVA Compass Stadium. Unbelievable stuff going through BBVA Compass Stadium. We'll get to that in a second. Quick word here for Bud Light. Soccer fans, remember, Bud Light is the official beer of the Houston Dynamo and the Mexican national team. And Bud Light reminds you, get over to HoustonDynamo.com. Get your season tickets for both the Dynamo and the Dash. The Gold Cup is also coming to BBVA Compass Stadium. And Bud Light reminds you, get out with like-minded individuals. Get to the games. Be in a stadium. It's all well and good to go to bars and pubs. I get that. Watching other leagues. There's nothing like being there live. And BBVA Compass Stadium's got Friday night, it's the Houston Dash in action. Saturday, it's the Dynamo. And international content coming through all the time. And it's a very busy summer at BBVA Compass Stadium. We got a special guest coming on in a second to talk about that. Bud Light, remind you, catch a Dynamo international soccer. Bud Light, the perfect beer for whatever happens. Bud Light is the official beer of the CONCACAF Gold Cup at BBVA Compass Stadium. Quick word here also to remind you that we want you over on our Facebook page, Soccer Matters. So get over there. I'm posting what I think are relevant articles, lots of debate. You'll get some of my opinion. But the other cool thing is it becomes sort of a hub for everybody to bring their own opinion, much like this show. And that's what we seek out over there. So, you know, I might set the table. I might stir the pot. I might beat the bushes a little bit. And I might feel strongly about an opinion. You can agree. You can disagree. But come over there and make it happen. You know, you guys have opinions. You have helped grow the sport on the radio. So get over to Facebook, Soccer Matters. Also, you can follow me on Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock. With that, we bring in from BBVA Compass Stadium. She's a big-timer. Gina Rotolo joins us now. Gina, how are you?
Hi.
So glad to have you on the show. And, you know, Corona Light is presenting, Kenny Chesney, the big revival tour at BBVA Compass Stadium this Friday, May 22nd. It is Friday, May 22nd. Tell us a little bit about Kenny Chesney, because I guess this is going to be the biggest concert ever held at BBVA Compass Stadium.
It sure is. And in fact, we are in the middle of our countdown to Kenny. We've got 10 days. 10 days till Memorial Day weekend, people. So it's going to be huge. In fact, I can share even some more exciting news with you tonight. So that weekend in general is going to be pretty massive here at BBVA Compass Stadium, because not only are we kicking off with Kenny Chesney, Big Revival Tour, which also has Jake Owen and Chase Rice coming to perform. It's a whole day of events, everything from tailgating. We start out with a free beach party event right here with like real sand pit and live entertainment. Broadcasting all day long. It's going to be a massive, you know, we all know we're all going to take that Friday off anyway. Call in quote unquote sick, 24-hour flu. So make it a 4-day weekend. But yeah, we'll start off with that on Friday. And then, on Saturday afternoon, it's pretty exciting. Metro is going to be doing the grand opening of the light rail. So we will have a massive free community celebration here at BBVA Compass Stadium starting around 4:30. We'll have Maronese Parker. We'll have a lot of the city dignitaries, a lot of guests, obviously a lot of involvement from Chris Canetti, Brian Ching, and obviously and the rest of the Dynamo crew coming over for and Dash being here for that event. It will also include a free concert event from Neo, Frankie J, and a series of other performers. So it's a pretty big weekend here, Memorial Day.
And then let's also talk about soccer content coming through, because look, this is one of the great soccer cities in America. You got the Gold Cup, you got a doubleheader with the Gold Cup. We've got Costa Rica coming, who in the World Cup was one of the great success stories. I mean, what an amazing story they were. We've got Jamaica with Giles Barnes and likely Jermaine Taylor playing against Canada. So there's a lot of really unique ties. I mean, when you have Dynamo players playing in the Gold Cup, playing at home here in Houston, representing their country, pretty exciting. And then let's talk about Manchester City coming to play the Dynamo on the 28th of this month as well. So how do you keep this all in order down there?
You know, it's been, I would have to say, so May is probably the busiest month we've ever seen in our 3 years. In fact, today is our 30th anniversary. We are officially 3 years old as of today, and it's hard to believe. You know, I was here as part of the grand opening crew with the stadium. So it's been a remarkable and very, very busy 3 years, and every year we continue to add to our event list. You know, we've got, you know, we're busy pretty much 12 months out of the year. Already, you know, prior to the soccer season opening, we held, the very beginning of January, we held a fantastic sold-out event with Club America. And it was, you know, great international game. Right after that, we did a huge free event, which was the Christ for All Nations Gospel Crusade. That brought 27,000 people to this building that I can assure you had probably never seen a Dynamo game or a soccer game before. And immediately after that, you know, it exposes all these other people that have never been to the building that aren't necessarily introduced to the soccer product or have been to any game at all. And it introduces them to what we do here. And the core of our product and the heart of what we do every day, all day, is obviously soccer, whether it's the Dynamo, the Dash, or a variety of these international games that we've hosted in the past, and we'll continue to do that.
Gina, can I stop you for a second?
Can
I stop you for a second?
Sure.
You know, the day the Revival was there, I was walking through the parking lot, and I had a bunch of different people coming up to me, and I guess I must have represented the downtrodden, because they all wanted to take me places to help me. They were very sympathetic to me, and then I finally figured out there was a Revival down there. But I had people calling me over and, you know, are you okay? And I was like, you know, am I growing a third ear out of my head or something? So I had a lot of people that were very interested in trying to help me that day. And, you know, I saw the operation. It was huge.
It was massive. You would have thought, I mean, they started loading in. I think it took, you know, several days ahead of it. It looked like we were hosting, you know, a U2 concert or something. It was massive. You know, and along that line, again, all these other events, whether it's rugby, you know, we have a unique opportunity this year because we're hosting the first time Texas has ever hosted the Major League Lacrosse All-Star Game. So when we bring in other events like lacrosse, like rugby, a gospel crusade, Kenny Chesney, things of that nature, you know, at the end of the day, it's bringing him here to the stadium, which is the home of the Houston Dynamo and the Dash and TSU. So the variety of events allows more people to get turned on to our, you know, to what we do on, you know, as our core product with soccer. So it's exciting.
She's Gina Rotolo of BBVA Compass Stadium.
And
Gina,
you know,
before you go
old,
on,
we're still the new kid on the block.
Hold on 1 second. Remind people, too, of the uniqueness of this facility, too. It's a very unique stadium. And for people that haven't been there, and I was discussing this with somebody today, get into this stadium because it is incredibly unique and it's very, very different. And it's become just a major player in venues in Houston.
Absolutely. You know, we seat 22,000 people. But really, you know, for example, with this Kenny Chesney show, it's going to be probably the closest thing you'll ever have to having him play your own backyard. I mean, it is coming here and seeing any event is nothing like any other property in Houston. The way we're built, you know, it's very intimate. You're right on top of the action. So whether you're in the front row in the lower bowl or you're at the top of the upper bowl, you've got a great view. You've got easy, you know, convenient access to everything, and you really feel part of what you're doing. When you, you know, it's great for sporting events, but when you see that from a concert perspective with what we're going to do this, you know, next weekend, it's going to be, you know, it's completely different, and it's an amazing atmosphere. I'm very excited.
Gina, real quick, can you confirm, is the NCAA Men's College Cup here in 2016? Is that confirmed? Because I've read that a lot of places.
That is in the works. So we'll
okay, but
have
that's not confirmed, right? It's not 100% sure. But there's a very good chance it could be here.
Yeah. And I mean, again, all these other things we're doing, we're definitely on the map and on the radar for a lot of great, exciting events. You know, we hope to keep, you know, my job is to keep us programmed and doing all sorts of other stuff in addition to what we do from just the Houston Dynamo and the Dash.
You're doing a great job. Gina, thank you very much for coming on the show tonight. We appreciate it.
Great.
Thanks so much, Glenn. Keep up the great work. That is one hardworking woman right there. And you know what? Because Gina was just on, let's do this. Well, we know there's country music fans out there. Got a pair right now to Kenny Chesney. Tenth caller, Kenny Chesney, a pair of tickets, the Big Revival Tour. It's BBVA Compass Stadium. It's Friday, May 22nd, 7 o'clock. Right now, Kenny Chesney, 10th caller. You've got the tickets. We'll take a break here. We've got a lot coming up on the show here tonight. We've got coming up in the next segment. You will hear from U.S. Women's National Team legendary three-time gold medalist Shannon Box. And then after that, we've got Robbie Earle, the NBC analyst, on the program as well. But right now, 10th caller, Kenny Chesney tickets for the Big Revival Tour. Pair of tickets right now. We'll take a break.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the Gao Studios in Houston, here's Glenn Davis.
It is always good to talk women's soccer, and it's always good to talk women's soccer with, quite frankly, one of the legendary players of the U.S. Women's National Team. And as we all know, the Women's World Cup will take place beginning in June in Canada. Another big moment for the women's game globally. More teams involved at this event. And, of course, the United States trying to win that World Cup again for the first time since 1999. Joining us right now, three-time gold medal winner, a finalist for the 2005 FIFA World Player of the Year. Did you hear what I just said? Finalist for the 2005 FIFA World Player of the Year. She is Shannon Box. Shannon, thank you very much for coming on the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, you know, the more I read about you, and I already knew you were a remarkable story, but your remarkable story seems to get more remarkable. 37 years of age, you've won a gold medal three times. You have overcome a lot of different obstacles. First off, just tell me, what keeps you going?
I think just the drive and the love of the game. I mean, I think the each time that I've either been injured or I was pregnant, the idea of coming back was always a must. I just love this game so much, and just being around the team and the adrenaline you get by going, you know, on the field in those big moments like a World Cup or an Olympics, is you can't get that back anywhere else. And so it's just that drive of like, oh, such a great experience, and you just want to keep enjoying it.
You know, you come back to this, the point of passion, and you know, the leagues are trying to make it here professionally and everything, and all these experiences that you have had. But in the end, when you say the words love of the game, I mean, is that really what the priority is always for you?
Always. I mean, I've always told myself the minute that this isn't enjoyable for me, then I'm going to be done. And I had moments of that, you know, where I kind of struggled with that at different points. You know, coming after college, I think there was a point that I gave it up and brought it back and said, wow, you know, I started playing with a local co-ed team and found the love of the game again. And that's what drove me to then play in the first league, you know, the WPS. And that's what got me going. And, you know, I think after 08, I was like, you know, should I be done? You know, is this my time? And something just always kept me going. And I always say that it's the love of the game, because I just know every time I get on the field and I touch that soccer ball, it's just, there's a passion that I still have for it. And again, I think, you know, the adrenaline that you get, you can't find that anywhere else. And I think that's the part that I'm going to miss the most when I do finally say I'm done.
Are you worried about losing that? Because it is pretty seductive, isn't it?
It is. It really is. I'm going to have to find something else to, you know, take over that, because you're never going to have that again. I mean, just even the other day, we were up in San Jose for our game, the send-off game, and the atmosphere, you just felt that electricity and that different feeling before, you know, that we hadn't felt in a long time. And it always, like, that I felt like it was the first time that I was like, oh my gosh, the World Cup is right here. It's right around the corner, because I could feel it in the fans. I could feel it in our teammates. And you just knew, like, okay, let's go. And you can't get that back anywhere else.
She's Shannon Box, U.S. national team midfielder, again, three-time gold medalist, has played in three Women's World Cups, has finished in third place or better with the USA at the 2003, 2007, 2011 FIFA Women's World Cup. She also played the game at Notre Dame and won a national championship there as well. And, of course, we know that with Randy Waldrum is mm-hmm. here in Houston with the Houston Dash. Let's get back to you, though, because the incremental rise in this game, I mean, you have spanned quite some time now, so you've seen it come, you know, you've seen the climbing of the rungs here in many mm-hmm. places, certainly in the international game. Speak about that a little bit.
It's great. I mean, that's what we want, you know, and you look at when I came on the team, I was 26 years old, and, you know, the quality I thought was amazing then, but then now I'm looking at these young players that are, you know, trying to take our spots, pretty much these old veterans, so trying to take our spots. And just the level that they're at with their technique and the level of understanding of the game, it's so much higher than it was for me when I was their age. And it's so great to see just within the U.S. team, but then to also see other countries and just the quality that you're starting to see there. France, I mean, they're an amazing team. Japan has just come full circle, and you're just seeing some of these other teams that are just more and more soccer, more women's soccer, and they're just getting better and better. So the quality just keeps getting better, which is what we want. We want the game to improve.
I find it fascinating that you know, you mentioned France, you know, and culturally their team, much like the men's team, you know, they mm-hmm. they have their own nuances. Obviously, they're very technical, but there are some real similarities with the culture of each country, which transfers over to the way they play the game.
Definitely. You know, and I think that's the thing that you're starting to see a little bit too. I mean, even I think I mentioned Japan. I just, you know, the tradition of their team is, okay, we're going to be very technical. We're going to keep small passes. And I think in prior years and big Olympics that we played them before, it's like, okay, well, we know we're going to have to struggle with them in the middle third of the field, but in the final third, you know, they're not that great. Like, they don't really like to take shots. They like to kind of be pretty. And France, I think, was like that kind of in the past. Like, in 2011, you started to see them rise, but they still have that, like, okay, well, we want to look pretty in the middle third. And once they got to the final third, it wasn't like, but now, man, we play them now, and they're so dynamic in the final third. And you saw that in Japan in 2011. They were taking shots. They were scoring lots of goals. And you're just seeing them transition to being better and better in more aspects of the game. And I think that's just a great quality for all the teams in the countries. And this World Cup is going to be amazing because the teams are so good.
Do you see any teams that might be a surprise that maybe not everybody's seen? Are there any teams that might be a little bit intriguing to you, maybe because you don't know a whole lot about them, but you've maybe seen them played or played against them that we should be on the lookout for?
Good question. You know, because every time someone asks me, it's, you know, usually your normal, like Germany, France, Japan. You know, Brazil always is always a strong team. They just don't seem like it before. It's like they show up in these big events. So I think that's always a team to watch out for. Mm-hmm. Man.
You got the Netherlands and Ecuador. And I mean, in some ways, these are really kind of unknown teams.
They are, and I guess I don't know that much about them, to be honest. So, you know, I think that's something we're going to be, you know, we have a very hard group. Australia, mm-hmm. you know, you can never count them out. Nigeria is a very strong, athletic team. You can never count them out, you know, as far as more so just their unpredictability. You know, I don't know if they would make it that far, but just the unpredictability of their play, like, that's what is good for them, you know, and it works. Obviously, Sweden. You know, always very tough to play against. So there's going to be a lot of good games and a lot of good teams. And, you know, I think that we're just mainly want to focus on what we do well and go out there and do our thing and not focus too much on other teams. So but I think we're all very excited to get this started.
She's Shannon Box, U.S. Women's National Team midfielder, has just had an outstanding career. As I looked over your resume and your body of work here, I was just like, wow, and it keeps going on and on and on. Now, I'm only mentioning your age, Shannon, because, you know, at 37, you know, a lot of athletes, their time is up, and it's up 7 years prior to you. Yours isn't up, but you've also sort of had to reinvent yourself, and you may have a more specialized role under Jill Ellis right now. Just explain that a little bit to us.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously, you know, I've always never tried to think of age as being a factor of when I should be done. It was more on how I was playing and can I still compete. And I think that I can, and I think that's what always drove me this past year of coming back is I believe I still can compete with the players here and the players that we're playing against. But I have had to reinvent myself, and I definitely have had this time around had long talks with Jill of what's my new role, you know, what will my role be? And it is going to be very different, but it's going to be more coming off the bench and supporting the team that way, my experience. It's going to be those types of things. But yeah, every time I've had to change, you know, I think with the lupus piece as well, the illness that I have, I had to really reinvent myself since 2010. So when last World Cup came and last Olympics, I was definitely doing things different to kind of keep my body going at the level that it needed to go.
Let's talk about the lupus, because this is also a part of the story here, because it's a, I guess it's an autoimmune disease. It affects your joints and things. You don't know when it flares up. How do you manage this? And I mean, are you just kind of at the beck and call of when it wants to sort of rear its ugly head?
Yeah, at times for sure. You know, I think that's the big thing about lupus. It's very unpredictable. You know, they call it the cruel mystery just because you just have no idea when it's going to hit. I fortunately am on medicine that helps control it a little bit. I also, you know, every single person that has it differently. So I probably would say I'm more of a mild to medium case, and the medicine that I'm on helps with that. But, you know, you meet people that have it very severely, that can barely get out of bed and do different things. And I have moments of that with players, but overall, I'm really able to control it. I eat really healthy as far as gluten-free. I've learned, you know, different ways to lift weights so that I'm not putting more stress on my joints and my body and my muscles. But yeah, it's when it hits. I mean, I had one last week, 2 days before the game, and I was like, okay, well, let's hope that it goes away within a day or two. And by the time the game came on Sunday, I was feeling great again. So, you know, you really don't know when it's going to hit. But now that I've had it hit a couple times, there are definitely days where I can say, okay, I need to maybe take it easier today. And I have the support behind me with this team. I definitely know in the camp before, I was like, Jill, I'm not feeling that great today. And she was very open to saying, okay, well, maybe we take it easy with you today. You can pull out whatever you need. So that support has helped a lot.
Yeah, very understanding. But that's also because they know the value that you bring to the team. How long do the episodes last sometimes? Do they vary in times? And yeah, have you ever been warming up?
Yeah, they vary. I mean, for some people, they can be months. For some people, they can be weeks. Mine are usually days. If they're really bad, they'll be a week. But usually they're a day, maybe 2 days. But in mine are more flares of joint pain and fatigue, where other people can have organ issues. So I'm very lucky in that fact that my organs are doing really, really well. I don't think I'd still be playing at this level if that was the case. But with my joints and stuff, yes, I can definitely help. You know, I use compression pants. I do different things to try to ease the pain that can come with joint pain. You know, obviously I've had multiple knee surgeries, so that's the first place it likes to go to. Mm-hmm. And I have to kind of be very careful with that. But, you know, it's definitely a disease that's very unpredictable, and that is not fun to deal with.
Yeah, there's always a lot of mystery around autoimmune diseases, too, like how you contract these things and how they become a part of your life. And they're just mysterious as well.
They vary. And, you know, I mean, I thank you for letting me talk about it, just because I know that a lot of people don't know what lupus is. And the more and more people can talk about it and understand it a little bit better. I mean, that's the thing. I look normal. You know, I'm out here doing something very active, and yet I still have it. And so, I think people sometimes question it to be like, well, you seem normal, and that's what it is, you know. There's only so many symptoms that show. I have a rash on my face that's pretty much makes my face red, and that's one of my only shown signs that I have it.
Well, there's a stigma around it, too, because people just don't really know what it is. Just hear the word.
Yeah. The more it's talked about, the better, and the more knowledge gives us a little bit more help from research, and, you know, because there is no cure at the moment. So obviously I'm working with the foundation to help advocate for it and to bring more awareness so that we can get some more help. So that's great.
Shannon, when you are managing it, you're obviously managing it with the way you train. So if you've got joint problems, do you do things that maybe aren't as, you know, if you're trying to do some cardiovascular work, do you do stuff that's less, you know, lower impact, swimming, biking, or that's hard to do?
Rowing, biking, swimming, a lot of that I'll do. You know, I mean, obviously now we're on turf, so sometimes I have to be careful, you know, making sure, okay, and that it's been great that we've been training on it so much because my body is getting more and more used to it. But yeah, it's definitely when I'm home and I can, you know, do some cross training, I try to do that as much as possible. And it's only the times that I start to feel, you know, otherwise I'm training just like everybody else. But the lifting piece, I definitely don't do heavy lifting. I do more body weight and things like that. And our fitness coach here has been great for the last 5 years, I think, has worked with me on changing my routine up more than other players to make me still strong, but healthy.
Last question before I let you go. You've had almost 200 appearances for the United States. You've won 3 gold medals. You've been in 3 World Cups. You're about to go to your 4th. It's just an unbelievable body of work, as I mentioned before. But you're also a mother. So where does being a mom rank with all of this?
Oh, my gosh. Number one, the mom situation is just, I mean, you don't get it until you have one. And it's just, she's the best thing ever. And I think, though, that drives me to perform even better, though, now. You know, and soccer is my love. But, man, she's number one. And it's amazing once you have one, you just, everything is about her. And even what I'm doing now, going to the World Cup and doing those things, it's been a journey and it's been a long one. It hasn't been easy at all. And all the adversity that I've been through in the so many years that I've been on this team, I want her to see those pictures and I want to explain to her that life isn't easy. And I did this for you so that I could show you that you can do anything you want to do. And so in the end, she still comes first when it's me out on the soccer field because I'm playing for my team. I'm playing for my country, but I'm really playing for her too.
Your commitment, your ability, things you've overcome here, Shannon, just incredible. Thank you so much for sharing your story. Thank you so much for coming on. I'll tell you what, after the World Cup, when you guys win it, we'll bring you back on. How about that?
Awesome. That'd be great.
All right. Thank you
so much.
Thank you, Shannon. That's Shannon Box.
Okay.
The U.S. Women's National Team, what an amazing story. 37 years of age, she's going to her 4th World Cup. Probably a specialized role for Jill Ellis off the bench. Has had an outstanding career, has played throughout all the professional leagues here in the United States. U.S. women are up in Canada this summer. The Women's World Cup begins in June. We'll take a break here.
ESPN 97.5. You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 from the Gau Studios in Houston. Here's Glenn Davis.
Welcome back to ESPN 97.5 Soccer Matters. A great friend of the show who's provided some wonderful insight. He's a former Premier League player. You see him as the NBC analyst for the Premier League. He joins me now. He's Robbie Earle. Robbie, thank you very much for coming on the program, as always.
No problem, Glenn.
Well, let's start out with today, Bayern Munich and Barcelona. Mm-hmm. Boy, it sure is tough chasing a second leg down 3 goals against a team that's got Suarez, Messi, and Neymar Jr., isn't it?
For sure. You know, they were the difference in the end. You know, people call them the 3 amigos now. There's only 2 amigos second half, and maybe the power's in the 3 of them because it didn't quite look the same with Suarez coming off at half-time. I believe it's some kind of tightening of calf muscles as a precaution. But when they click together, Glenn, it's the best front three in world football. And not just ability, because I think that that's easy for us all to recognise, but when you talk about the understanding between the three, the appreciation between the three of them, and the unselfish way with which they play. And listen, CR7, we know, is an outstanding player in Cristiano Ronaldo, but he's not as selfless as these three. And when I see a picture of whoever scored of the three of them, they all celebrate, you know, at the same level. As though, almost if you took a snapshot, you wouldn't know which one of the three has actually got the goal. They take a real kind of pride and appreciation in working together. And they were the difference in the end. Too much for a naive Bayern team defending. You know, came back a little bit spirited second half, but had too much to do and couldn't handle the front three across the two games.
Robbie, everybody and their mother, a lot of people said, look, there's no way these three can play together. Neymar, yeah. Lionel Messi, and Luis Suarez. There's a lot of people eating crow right now. So my quick movement goes towards Luis Enrique, the manager.
Yeah, you have to say that. I always sort of laugh when people say that these three players or great players can't play together, because the one thing that great players have is an understanding of each other. They have an intelligence and a way of playing. And if you can get that unselfishness, if you can get that appreciation, so they play for the team and for each other as well as individually, Luis Enrique, you say, has to take a lot of credit from that, because it's not an easy job for a manager, and you've got to make sure that, you know, while egos are pampered to, that it's about the team eventually, and it's about the group. Certainly these three, you know, work as hard as anybody in the team. They look like they, you know, they don't stand on ceremony. You know, Luis Suarez sets a great example at the centre of the pitch for them. And, you know, the other two, Neymar and Messi, you know, play along to the same tune.
Are we seeing a Luis Suarez that has been tempered by all the off-field stuff and the attention? Has this, as in any off-field problems with players, some react to it in different ways. Are we seeing him tempered by that and focused more on being a good citizen and obviously
like
a player
so.
Of Barcelona?
I think there's a maturity to his game now that's come into play. I think he's focused. I think he realizes that sometimes some of his off-field antics have shadowed what's been, you know, is a great career. He's a top-class player. And, you know, when he first got to the football club, he had to take his time. He was out for a while, and then his form wasn't great when he first came into the team. But he puts everything in. He gives 100% in terms of effort. So he's unique in many ways at the very top-class footballers, because generally they rely on their talent and their ability. But Luis Suarez brings that with the endeavour and the work rate of a local player or a player without that much ability, and he sets a tone for the team. And I think coming in and for people like Messi to see how hard he works and how giving he is to the team, it's even taking Messi's game up to another level. And Neymar now is starting to produce more, what I would say, more mature performances for him, you know, somebody so young.
He's Robbie Earl, NBC analyst. You see him on the Premier League. He has also done a ton of Major League Soccer as well as other events. As we continue on in this discussion, is there anything today, despite the fact that Barcelona over the course of these two legs advances pretty easily, is there anything today that the winner of Juventus and Real Madrid can take away from this Bayern series into the final in Berlin?
I think defensively, there's still a little bit of a soft spot around Barcelona. Set pieces, I think that they struggle on their defensive organisation, that will to get tight to someone, to head a ball away, to block something going towards goal. I still think would give you a little bit of hope. The way that Bayern came back in the second half, I know Suarez was off the pitch and probably had a bearing in terms of rhythm, but, you know, the way that Bayern came back into the game and created opportunities, you know, had some looks at goal, would give the likes of Real Madrid, with their attacking talent, some belief, would give Juventus, with maybe their better defensive structure, about closing. You know, they certainly won't defend as naively as Pep Guardiola, as Bayern Munich did against those front three. It won't be 1v1, oh, take me on, if you beat me, it's okay. I mean, there'll be blocks in front, there'll be, you know, lots of body contact, there'll be people easing people off the ball, they'll be nice and tight, they'll have a spare man in and around the danger area. So it'll be a completely different game. whichever of the two come out of tomorrow's semifinal.
Does this set up pretty good for Juventus? Because in a way, maybe it makes Real Madrid play against maybe the nature of how they want to play. I mean, they've got to go after them. They've got to break down a deep defending team, basically.
For sure. I don't think, you know, one or two people are saying, oh, you know, Madrid have come out of it okay. I don't think, I'm not thinking it quite the same. I think Juventus will back themselves to be defensively strong, to not give too much away. They've got threats on the counter-attack. Paul Pogba believes back in the squad and could play a part tomorrow, and his surgery runs from deep could be something Real Madrid have to deal with. And it's not a Real Madrid team that's ticking on little cylinders. There seems to be little confrontations and little cliques going on within the football club. And listen, if they were to go a goal behind or not open up Juventus as they'd like, sometimes those things sort of come to the fore a little bit more under those kind of circumstances. So it's an interesting game. Lots of subplots, lots of, you know, great players are on show. And it'd be more whether Juventus' defensive capabilities can clamp down on Real Madrid and make it a tight and difficult game.
Which leads me to the Premier League and not being able to navigate the Champions League now. We've got two Spanish teams, you know, we've got an Italian team, and of course a German team that exited today. Is there anything to that, or is it just a good year for these other clubs? And, I mean, do we really see anybody in the Premier League that could have really gone far in this tournament? And, of course, we got Jose Mourinho, who's won this before at Chelsea.
I think with Jose Mourinho and the Chelsea group, they will be the most disappointed. I still think there was a slight naivety about City in European football that is developing, but they're not quite there yet. Arsenal had one bad day at home to Monaco and pretty much did their sort of run in the competition as well. So I think, you know, people went a little bit overboard that, you know, from the quarterfinals there was no English teams through from that point on, and, you know, we have to look at English football. But I think that, you know, there were circumstances with that. There was detail with the Chelsea performance against 10-man PSG. They should have taken care of business. Arsenal should never have lost in the manner they did to Monaco at the Emirates, give themselves too much to do. So I think we went a little bit overboard on that, but it is a lesson. You know, I think English Premier League teams like to sort of wave that banner of the best league in the world, and I still think we have to sort of sometimes understand what best means. Is it the best, the most watchable, which I think in those terms, yes, it can hold its head up high, but in terms of best technical, in terms of best tactical, I still think at times the English teams have some way to go.
Yeah, you use the word naivety and naive in this, but then you look at the players. I mean, these are all very experienced players, experienced managers. Take me a little bit more into the detail of that tactical nuance, and, you know, what is it? Okay. Pinpoint it for me a little bit more.
One of the very big things you learn in English football, and it's bantered around very early on, you say this. You'll get a good, let's say, a midfield player in England, and the first thing he says, he's brilliant at winning the ball back. He's great at winning it back. I would say when you go into other European countries, the first thing they'll say is he's great at keeping the ball, because if you don't give the ball away, you don't have to win it back. And there's a real different slant on the way that football's played. So one of the exciting things about the Premier League is the exchange of possession, that one team have it, they attack. It becomes like a basketball game at times, and it's great viewing, and we see late goals and lots of drama. But in European football, Glenn, you've got to do things a bit differently. You've got to play with a little bit more structure. You've got to play with a different rhythm. You've got to have a little bit more flexibility within your systems. You've got to take care of the football better than you do. So Arsenal, if they're losing 1-0 against Monaco on a bad night, it's a 1-0 defeat and you stay in the competition. Mm-hmm. You know, if Chelsea need to develop a different way and get forward and get a goal, they do that. And so I just think it's those nuances, it's those little details that at times the Spanish teams and the German teams have taken a step on. But, you know, it wasn't that long ago that English teams were making Champions League finals and winning them, the likes of Sir Alex Ferguson and Chelsea, obviously, before with Roberto Di Matteo. So it wasn't that long ago. You know, we shouldn't sort of file every criticism in. But I do think the style of the game, the English game, that is so rewarding and gets so many global viewers around the world, sometimes hurts teams when they go into Europe, when they try and play with the same style.
Doesn't translate. Great answer. Hey, I'm going to take you to Stoke City, because here in Houston, Jeff Cameron, I guess Jeff Cameron's the one U.S. player right now, player, that is getting more minutes in the Premier League than anybody outside of goalkeepers. So assess his performance. I know you've seen him play a number of times for Stoke this year.
I talked with Jeff when we were over in England about a month ago. We ended up having a bit of dinner, actually, on the evening. It was nice to catch up with him. And obviously, I saw him. We were sort of reminiscing. I saw him as a sort of more or less like a central midfield attacking player for Houston Dynamo playing against the Portland Timbers. And I think I saw him playing at centre-back. And we're talking about his versatility there. And then really moved to Stoke, hoping that he would sort of hold one of those central positions on the pitch, possibly defensive midfield. But it's had to settle for right-back. But how things have worked out in the system under Mark Hughes, where Mark Hughes rolls the ball out from the back. He said he's having plenty of ball. He's allowed to advance into midfield and make things happen, which is quite a stark contrast to when he was playing with Tony Pulis, who very much wanted, you know, a little bit more scientific, you know, putting the ball into certain areas. He didn't have as much time and opportunity to put his own mark on his game. So he was enjoying his football. He's glad to be part of a Premier League team that's had one of the best seasons in the league since they've been in the Premier League. And, you know, I think he's looking to probably re-establish himself, whether it be at right back or in the midfield area.
But isn't it, Robbie, that versatility that has really made him so valuable to Mark Hughes and Stoke?
Well, it is. And I mean, it's funny, we chatted about this debate, that sometimes versatility is a strength and it's good because you can fill in different positions. But there is one or two occasions it's hurt him when, I think it was Bardsley come back from injury, come back in the team. Jeff was playing at right back, sort of doing the job, and then he didn't get back into midfield. And sometimes it can go against you that you become, really come as a jack of all trades and a master of none. And he doesn't want to fall into that category. He wants to either be seen as an attacking right back who can play, which is a very important role in teams now if you're going to play from the back, because, you know, fullbacks generally get a lot of possession. Or if not, he wants to then, you know, say that he wants to be a defensive midfield player and establish himself in the team as that. So, you know, there was talk earlier in the season whether he was going to stay or go, and he decided he was the right thing to stay. And I think it was the right decision for him. I still think there's more for him to show to the Premier League. He's a better player than even they've seen at the moment. And I think people who know him at Houston, like yourself, would adhere to that. So I think it's a matter of bedding down, getting some games under his belt and moving forward.
Amazing story he is. All right, quick word, Robbie, on Portland. You know, you've done many, many of their games as an analyst.
Yeah.
Where do you see them right now under Caleb Porter? What sort of growth has there been in the Rose City?
Well, I think it was a good win for them against Montreal. I still think he's finding a few pieces in the jigsaw, Caleb. Big loss, obviously, with Valeri and Will Johnson at the start of the season for varying different reasons. Valeri with his creative talent and his goal-scoring ability. He got a goal against Montreal last time out. Will Johnson's just got that steel and that grit and that leadership that all good teams need, all successful teams need. And I think maybe Portland missed a little bit of that early at the start of the season. And maybe when things aren't going well, you need a Will Johnson around. I sort of famously said in one of my broadcasts that, you know, Will Johnson's one of those guys who'd kick his granny if he could get the 3 points. And I'd apologise to Nanny Johnson.
I think Robbie Earhart might have done that.
People knew what I meant when, you know, that's the kind of personality he is. And I believe he's getting back to form. And then I think for Portland, the issues that have been, Glenn, I think, you know, defensively and midfield with the players they've got and Nagby sort of dovetailing with Valeri, there's enough quality on the side. I still think they struggle a little bit to turn a lot of their possession into goals, into goal-scoring chances. They, you know, their front line doesn't quite match the rest of the group, and I still think Caleb's finding that out and trying to sort out how's the best way to go forward. You know, I contrast that to Houston with someone like Giles Barnes, who I've seen his career from over the pond, the likes of Derby when he broke into the team as a youngster. And how he's developed now to being, you know, probably one of the star players at Houston with his goals, with his assists, with his pace. You know, given the captaincy by Owen Coyle, looks like he enjoys that responsibility. And, you know, they have now, with the likes of Will Bruin and Giles, got people who can score goals, who can be a threat. So there's a nice contrast to the two teams at the weekend.
Rob, Robbie, thank you so much for the insight tonight. Thank you very much for coming on the program. As always, it's great catching up with you.
Always a pleasure, Mike. Speak to you soon.
All right, that's Robbie Earl, NBC analyst, played in the Premier League, also represented Jamaica. We wrap it up tonight in big style with Robbie. We thank you very much for listening here tonight. For producer Mike Volcaro, I'm Glenn Davis. Good night, everybody, and remember, soccer matters.
ESPN 97.5.